Reactor online. Sensors online. Weapons online. All systems nominal.
Hello, everybody. This is Carrie with Unicorn Company. First of all, I need to apologize for getting this episode out to you a week late. Or a little more, actually. Unfortunately, one of my partners passed away and has pretty much brought my life to a screeching halt. And even though I'm trying to deal with it best I can, I expect that there will be delays in things. I just ask that y'all stick with me through this, as things will get better. That being said, let's move into more Battletech-type subjects. In the news, there is essentially a big subject to cover. That would be the announcement of the new Force Packs. For a while, there has been a rumor of a Northwind Highlanders Force Pack with a SKU number rolling around on the internet. That rumor has finally sort of come to fruition with the announcement of several new Force Packs and a new premium miniature in the pipeline. The premium miniature, which we have a date of June for, is the Mad Cat TC. I know that on the tabletop, this thing is pretty awesome. I'm going to say, though, aesthetically, it doesn't impress me. It looks like a Mad Cat chassis with vulture arms and a summoner shoulder missile launcher on each side of the torso. Next, there are the new Force Packs. These include an Eridani Light Horse Hunter Lance, which will consist of a reposed Banshee, new variants of the Cyclops and Thunderbolt, and a new mech, the Sagittaire. I don't know if I ever pronounced that right. The next Force Pack is Hansen's Rough Riders Battle Lance. This Force Pack comes with a reposed Atlas, new variants of the Enforcer and Hatchetman, and, as the new mech in the Force Pack, the Penetrator. We also have the Northwind Highlanders Command Lance. This Lance has in it a reposed Highlander, new variants of the Grasshopper and Warhammer, and is a new mech, the Gunslinger. Then there is the Kellhound Striker Lance. Should be Strike Lance or Striker. I can't tell. This Lance has in it a reposed models of the Wolfhound, new variants of the Griffin and Crusader, and finally the Night Sky as a new miniature. The last one that's been announced is the Grey Death Legion Force Pack. This one will contain a reposed Shadowhawk, new variants of the Gargoyle and Catapult, as well as a new model, the Regent. Each of these Force Packs contains a Jumping Mech. The Jumping Mechs out of all the Force Packs are the Thunderbolt, Hatchetman, Highlander, which doesn't have it jumping in the preview image of the Force Pack, because I don't think it's a final image, Crusader, and Shadowhawk. The Force Packs will also have varying initial releases. It is implied, though, that they will eventually be available through all the outlets that you can get miniatures through, such as game stores. The Eridani Light Horse and Grey Death Legion Force Packs will initially only be available through Barnes & Noble. The Kellhounds are initially only available through the Catalyst web store, and the Hansen's Rough Rider box is only available to retailers using Alliance Games as a distributor, and the Northwind Highlanders will only be available to people who are using ACD. I actually moved I have totally lost my spot. I am so sorry. Yeah, the Northwind Highlanders will only be available through places that use ACD as their distributor. All of these except the Grey Death Legion Force Pack are slated for fall of this year. The GDL Force Pack should release in spring of 2023. I know that we are still in the news, but I need to say a couple things. The first of these is the fact that I personally believe that the jumping mechs should be left to things like special releases. So, in a way, the price point is essentially where you're paying $10 a mech as the Force Packs retail for $30 a piece, and I'm not counting the jumping mechs in there. And as far as Alpha Strike, the fact that the jumping models are jumping, it creates different line of sight involving the miniature while it comes to the mini interacting with the terrain, unless you're using practical line of sight rules, which literally say a mech can, is only so tall. So, if it like peeks over a building slightly, it doesn't count. This sort of segues into the next bit of information I want to share, which is the pending release of the Alpha Strike box set. The description of the game says that it will come with 13 miniatures, which will include two new minis, the Wraith and Pouncer. It also includes 13 Alpha Strike cards and 13 pilot cards, a set of battlefield support cards, a total of 15 cardstock buildings, two tree punch boards, and of course, your run-of-the-mill things like a rulebook, 24-page novella, universe primer, and reference sheets. There isn't a price point attached to this yet, although I would venture to guess that the game won't stray too far from the prices of the other box sets into the lot in the line. And I am looking forward to the release of this new set, or all of these new sets, and I'll go into that in a little bit. But for now, I'm going to continue with this massive new segment because there is yet another Alpha Strike product that has been announced and hopefully will work out, as it is a line of products. The combat, I mean, force manuals now. These will cover each of the factions in Battletech, will be able to work with Alpha Strike and Classic Battletech, and will start off with Force Manual Davian being the first of these new manuals to come out. It will even include revamped versions of the Kurita and Mercenaries books, which I'm really looking forward to this. And finally, on top of all this, was announced the Battletech Mercenaries Kickstarter, which is made to bring more mechs and vehicles into the game in plastic. These include the Firestarter, Griffin 2C, Ostrock, and Kraken. We'll also have vehicles, which they immediately mention the Galleon Light Tank, SRM slash LRM carrier, and the Demolisher tank. This will definitely be something to watch out for, as I am not gonna lie, I'm totally interested in the possibility of plastic and easily available vehicles in the game, as traditionally they've been sidelined in favor of mechs for the most part, and makes their integration a little awkward for Alpha Strike. So I know there's a lot more we could cover in the news, as there have been several products announced. Actually, before I even say this. Actually, no, I'll go into it later. Such as Dominion Divided, the Dark Age Technical Readout, and the Battletech Universe Sourcebook, a book to bring people up to speed on everything through 3150. I could probably do an entire episode about the recent news, all the rumors, and everything else floating around on the internet recently. But we do have a subject to talk about today, the FedCom Civil War. So in our last episode, we discussed the beginnings and endings of the Clan Invasion era and looked at some of the important bits in between. Today, though, we're going to look at the aftermath of that era, the Federated Commonwealth Civil War. As I think I mentioned at the end of the Clan Invasion, Victor came home as a prince without a throne, usurped by his sister, who now had control of both the Federated Commonwealth Rump State and the Laren Alliance. Now, there are two different things that I have to say. The first of these is that the FedCom Civil War is my favorite era. In fact, we could have simply stopped here, and I would be happy because everyone is shooting each other at some point here. And I also have to admit that this is a very nostalgic era for me, as this was the first era that I was there for everything. It was the last era that was handled fully under the original owners of Battletech, the FASA Corporation. Before we were thrown into the chaos of the WizKids' attempt to convert Battletech into a collectible miniatures game, and the dark age of classic Battletech when fans like myself and others kept the game alive on message boards and internet relay chat channels. The second of these is that in order to understand the Civil War era, you need to understand one of the two main protagonists of it, and that would be Catherine Steiner Davian. While I mentioned that she had split off the Laren half of the Commonwealth when the war started between the FedCom and the Free Worlds League, there's a lot more to her rise to power and what happened while Victor was off fighting the clans. Hans Davian, Victor, and Catherine's father, died of a heart attack, and the rulership of both realms fell to their mother, Melissa. She was a very well-loved and charismatic leader. She had offered previously to step down to allow Victor to take the throne. Honestly, it is a mistake that he never took her up on this, as I think his rule would have been much more stable and turned out much better than how he eventually came to power. which happened quite tragically as his mother, while giving an address, was killed by an assassin's bomb, which just happened to have been planted by an assassin working for Catherine. Victor at the time was too far away to be able to attend her funeral, and so she was buried on her homeworld without the person who would inherit her throne. Her own son in attendance. After her death, Victor favored being on New Avalon as opposed to Tharkad as a seat of government and trusted his sister Catherine to act in his stead in the Lyran half of the state. Catherine, though, was up to no good, and she spread rumors of Victor having their mother killed, used every opportunity to make him seem like a Davian military elitist who didn't care about the Lyran people, except as cannon fodder for the clans. And when the opportunity came, she broke her state away. While Victor was off fighting the Jaguars, he had left his other sister as the regent on his throne, Yvonne. While being a good person and who could have likely made a good leader if taught, wasn't up to the task. And with meddling from her older sister, Catherine was deposed by her before Victor could return. The coup happened off-screen while we were watching what happened with Operation Serpent and Bulldog, a brilliant little sleight of hand by the developers at the time. After returning to the Inner Sphere, Victor, who had no home, was appointed to the position of Precentor Marshal of Comstar and spoke for them at the next Star League conference. In this position, he was able to block Catherine from gaining the position of First Lord and cause the leader of the Capellan Confederation, I mispronounce this all the time, Sun Ze Liao, to become First Lord for that term of the Star League. This is not what caused the Civil War, but was only one of many things that led to outright conflict. In fact, there were quite a few things which, over time, led to conflict. The first of these was the fact that Catherine, who had taken the name Katrina to harken back to her grandmother, was more worried about securing power than she was the good of her people, and as such, worlds on which there was any dissent were punished through manufactured food and supply shortages. Those which still would not relent were assigned frontline military units to subdue them. The final straw, though, the thing that caused Victor to rally the troops and declare war on his sister, was the death of his brother, Arthur Steiner Davian. As he was about to give an address to the class at the Robinson Military Academy, he was killed in a bombing. The circumstances were so similar to Melissa's death so long ago, and Victor had found out that Catherine killed their mother, went into action on the assumption that she was behind it. In a bit of irony, she wasn't, as far as we know, and the culprits behind the assassination were never uncovered. And of course, that plot point has not been picked up, at least not as of this podcast. Victor immediately went into action, though, rallying whatever forces he could. Though nominally outnumbered by his sister's forces, he had the element of surprise and was eventually able to use the time it took her to respond to his initial actions to build forces to oppose her. In doing what he did, Victor was forced to resign as Precentor Marshal of the Comguards to ensure Comstar's neutrality. Even with this move, though, forces loyal to Victor abandoned their post in the Comguards to join Victor, an entire division. In addition, because of his involvement with the reformed Star League Defense Force, Victor had a foreign legion of sorts called the Outland Legion, a unit made up of warriors from all the various houses who had decided to join him in removing his sister from power. In the beginning of the conflict, before Victor made his announcement, some forces already began fighting. The most notable of these are on Solaris 7, where a match between mech warriors from a Davian stable and a Steiner stable spilled out into the streets of Solaris. This created essentially a mini civil war on that planet. Solaris became something of a wild west for a time, actually, as there were mech warriors from every single stable running loose, including notably a former Smoke Jaguar mech warrior who had gotten his hands on a Warhawk and was using it to challenge others to single combat. That's another subject for another day. The next flashpoint that is of note, and it is mainly because of the fact that it went from flashpoint to battle that became a meat grinder throughout the Civil War, was the world of Kathil? K-A-T-H-I-L. I don't know how y'all pronounce it. I call it Kathil. where units loyal to Victor and Catherine began fighting and would start a conflict on that world that would rage ceaselessly until the final stages of the war. Another of these flashpoints is a world called Thorin, where Archer Cristofori, a Star League Defense Force Medal of Honor recipient, was in charge of the local militia. His sister was a journalist and outspoken critic of Catherine. When she was killed by one of the officers in the Lyran regular army, during a roundup of people of interest because of their opinions, and then the man that murdered her was set free because of his political connections through the Archon and his father, Archer took actions to neutralize the regular army forces on world. While the conflict on Thorin and the nearby world of Murfid didn't last too long into the war, by the end of that small two-world conflict, Archer was a commissioned officer in the reestablished armed forces of the Federated Suns, and his job on those two worlds was done. But he would have a far-reaching impact on the outcome of the war. The final flashpoint, and the one that rang deep with the inhabitants of the Federated Suns, was the world of Centauris IV. The conflict on Centauris is covered in the computer game MechWarrior 4. The Dasari family was very outspoken about Catherine, and in order to bring them in line and make an example, Catherine dispatched the 5th Donegal Guard to the world. Lyran forces would depose the Dasari family and kill people they suspected of opposing the Archon. This would cause a massive backlash and only encouraged a growing resistance which fought until the second wave of the invasion, when finally outside support came from Ian Drazari, who was off-world at the time, bringing with him a unit made of ex-Fedcom officers and mercenaries. He was able to repulse the 5th Donegal, who had been under almost constant terror attacks. That isn't to say that the war was only contained in the Federated Commonwealth. Draconis Combine saw much of this as an opportunity to strike deep into the Combine. Or the Draconis March saw it as an opportunity to strike deep into the Combine. Catherine was more than happy to allow this to go on, as even though it meant that the units were a drain on resources that could have been used to fight against Victor, the units themselves were loyal to Victor. And as such, if they were occupied fighting the dragon, they wouldn't pose a threat to her. Each wave of the war, Victor would advance closer and closer to the Terran Corridor in order to cross through and begin his march towards New Avalon. Archer and his militia, which had been rechristened Archer's Avengers, was able to act as a spoiling force of sorts, keeping the Lyrans guessing where he would be. While in the books, he and his unit are compared to Lee's foot cavalry from the American Civil War, I would instead say he is more akin to Sherman in a way, only without a destination, which both confused and frustrated Lyran military planners, because his hit-and-run tactics and stopping at a world, nominally liberating it, and leaving an insurgent group behind in his wake, he helped to create issues for Catherine loyalists who were simultaneously trying to track him down and also stop Victor's forces from, hopping closer and closer to New Avalon. And, of course, the self-christened Archon Princess who was inhabiting it. All of this sort of had something happen on the side, though. And that would be Clan Jade Falcon. Seeing this as an incredible opportunity to pull another Coventry and performing a lightning blitz into the Lyran Alliance, Victor, not intending to see the Lyran state shattered by an invasion by Clan Jade Falcon, called upon Archer to work with Clan Wolf in Exile and units loyal to Catherine, including Adam Steiner. Yeah, the cartoon guy. And to have them stop the Falcons cold. This was done through an operation known as Operation Audacity, where the forces under Archer's command would run roughshod through the Falcon OZ, while forces under Adam's command had their own worlds to raid, as well as elements of Clan Wolf in Exile, who would eventually get information of Vlad Ward, which would prompt him to invade the Falcon OZ as well. In the aftermath of this, the Falcon Lyran border had no semblance to the pre-incursion border, but with wolves on their doorstep and their warriors having invaluable experience, the Falcons reached a peace with the Alliance and secured their occupation zone again. While this is going on, Victor was still driving towards New Avalon. While in the Terran Corridor, he received news that no one wants to ever hear. The love of his life, Omi Kurita, had been assassinated, and the drive stalled while Victor grieved. Worlds were still burning, and he had to work through knowing that not only was Omi dead, but on top of that, it wasn't too hard to figure out it was his sister's doing. Eventually, with encouragement from his friend, Kai Allard Lau, Victor was able to process his pain and became a man possessed. He was able to recall the forces that were still slogging through the Draconis Combine, added their firepower to his own. Additionally, he was able to pick up the Davian Heavy Guards, who had sat out the entire war because they were stranded on Galax by Catherine, who had stripped them of their transport assets before the outbreak of hostilities. While Victor made his way to New Avalon with his coalition of forces, his brother Peter, who had secluded himself for years, made his way to Tharkat, the capital of the Laren Alliance, to depose Nondi Steiner, who is the commanding general of forces in the Laren Alliance. Peter had a large force behind him as well, made up of units nominally loyal to Victor, and who were under his command. The battles of Tharkat and New Avalon would be some of the largest invasions seen since the retaking of Terra by the Star League Defense Force. So, not including naval assets, I want to go over the forces that were on each world and what happened to them. All right, so we're talking about regimental combat teams, and we'll get into that in a moment. But Victor had the 17th Avalon Hussars, the second Seti Hussars, 1st, 3rd, and 5th, and 6th Crucius Lancers, the Davian Assault, Heavy, and Light Guards, and the Heavy Guards had seen no fighting, the 2nd Davian Guards, the 2nd Robinson Rangers, the Maeda Draconis March Militia, the 1st Neus Cadre, the 20th Octurian Guards, 10th Laren Guards, the 244th Comguard Division, the 1st St. Ives Lancers, and the Outland Legion. Catherine was heavily outnumbered. The only forces that she could muster were the 22nd Avalon Hussars, the 1st Chisholm's Raiders, the 10th Dened Light Cavalry, the 3rd Robinson's Rangers, the Remagen Capellan Crucius March Militia, I think, CMM, which of course gets confusing, the 5th Donegal Guard, and the 299th Comguard Division, who while not loyal to Catherine, had said they would defend New Avalon from any attackers. Meanwhile, on Tharkat, Peter, by extension, had the 39th Avalon Hussars, the 20th Octurian Guards, the Blue Star Irregulars, the 1st Kailhounds, the 4th Wolf Guards from Clan Wolf, and the 4th Sky Rangers. Catherine had the 1st Aileron Jaegers, the 11th Octurian Guard, the 1st and 2nd Royal Guard, the 24th Laren Guard, and the 66th Comguard Division, who had also said the similar thing. We'll attack whoever attacks the planet. Anyway. So why do I bring up every unit that was involved? Well, out of the units involved with the assault on New Avalon, 17 out of 17 out of 25 were destroyed. I mean, the losses on Tharkat were far less, for God knows why, where 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. Out of 12 units, only 1, 2, 3, 4 were destroyed. But what does destroyed mean when we're talking about this? And these sources are taken straight from the FedCom Civil War source book. So it's not like I'm just pulling something out of my butt on this. So let's take a look at the actual numbers. Like, what does this mean? So every unit that was destroyed is reduced below 40% in strength. Considering that with the exception of the Comstar and Clan units, each of these is a regimental combat team, which, if I recall correctly, is 3 regiments of mechs, a regiment of vehicles, and a regiment of infantry with attached aerospace assets. That is, if all spread equally, is a loss of 195 mech warriors, 65-vehicle crews. You figure there's probably four personnel per vehicle for the crew, and 389 infantrymen per unit. On New Avalon alone, from destroyed units, it would be combined roughly 3,300 mech warriors, 1,100 vehicle crews, and 6,600 infantry. That doesn't even take into account non-combat personnel who weren't even accounted for in the numbers, or for the losses incurred by warship crews in the violent conflict over New Avalon. The people who fought in this conflict literally had less than a 50% chance of making it through this battle. In the end, regardless of the resistance that Catherine put forward on New Avalon, or that her aunt Nandi could put up on Tharkat, both worlds fell. What happened next pretty much shocked everybody. Victor abdicated in favor of his youngest sister, Yvonne, and in the form of Fed sons, at least in the form of Fed sons, and by extension, his brother, Peter, on Tharkat. Catherine was taken into custody, and after being moved to Ark Royal for incarceration, she was eventually claimed by Vlad Ward of Clan Wolf, and forced to be a bondsman. Now, eventually, much later on, she gained the status of mech warrior, and like her brother, would have a long-reaching effect, even into the Il-Clan era. Finally, today, we'll be covering our mech tech segment. I was originally planning on covering the Black Knight. Since I began writing this episode, though, one of my partners, as I mentioned earlier, did pass away. She was an awesome person, and I know that my life will never be the same without her. Her favorite bird in the world was the raven. And as a small way to honor her memory, I've chosen to cover that mech today. The Raven is a product of the Succession Wars, and an attempt to use electronic warfare equipment to interfere in enemy targeting and tracking. In addition to this task, it was believed the Raven could be able to use its EW equipment to assist in accurate artillery spotting. These mechs were intended to be attached to Capellan units at the company level, but ended up being attached to the battalion command level. Additionally, their relatively low speed in comparison to other scout mechs made them vulnerable to heavier units known to be scout hunters, such as the Cicada, Griffin, and Wolverine. The original Raven is built on a standard chassis and carries a total of 4 tons of armor. The mech is capable of a top speed of 86 kilometers an hour, and it is intended to be supported by other units, and seen as less of a threat than the other units around it. In case it does need to actually engage the enemy, the 1X carries a pair of medium lasers in its right arm and a short-range missile 6 launcher with a ton of ammunition in the right torso. These are all cooled by 12 heat sinks and provide a respectable amount of firepower for a mech of its size when it was developed. The Raven 1X has a battle value of 589. The RVN 2X Raven removes the electronic warfare equipment and replaces it with a single large laser. There isn't too much to say about this variant, other than the fact that it is a weird sidestep in the design. It literally removes a semi-functional piece of hardware to give it a long-range punch. That can cause a mech warrior to easily overwhelm their heat capacity, and in a way, it's a logical step, as the electronic warfare equipment was believed to not be that effective. So the battle value of this model is 887. The next in the X series of Ravens is the 3X. This model used the prototype triple strength Myomer that would react to a certain catalyst that House Stavian had developed both of them. The design was otherwise identical to the 1X and was essentially like the original, a testbed model. The mech wouldn't see that wide of distribution due to the use of the modified TSM and likely saw a similar fate as the 1X in being refitted to the 2X model. The battle value of this short-lived variant was 640. The last of the X series Ravens was the Raven 4X. This model was an attempt to make the Raven more maneuverable and increase its value as a scout. The way this was accomplished was by removing the experimental electronic warfare equipment of the 1X and replacing it with a pair of machine guns, sharing a single ton of ammunition, all mounted in the left arm, and adding 5 jump jets, allowing it to leap up to 300 meters at a time. Or no, that doesn't sound right. 30 meters per hex, 30 times 5. Sorry, 250 meters at a time. The battle value of the 4X is 820. Now that we are through the original prototype models of this machine, let's look at some of the production variants. The RVN 3L is the first in the real production Ravens that isn't a low-volume model, or a refit of one of those. Introduced in the Clan Invasion era, the 3L uses recovered Starleague era equipment to accomplish the job that the 1X could not. The mech is equipped with a Beagle Active Probe to find hidden enemy units, a Guardian ECM suite to interfere with advanced enemy electronics, a TAG laser designator to spot for artillery, and also a NARC missile beacon launcher, allowing it to tag targets of the NARC beacon to allow other units to target it easier with missile attacks. The mech does carry a pair of medium lasers in its right arm and a short-range six launcher in the right torso. It does utilize an extra light engine to give it a maximum speed of around 120 kilometers an hour and has all its ammunition protected with case. While it will still fall to an ammo explosion in the side torso, it is easier to salvage in campaigns. The battle value of the Raven 3L is 710. The next production of this mech is the RVN 3M model. This variant of the Raven takes it from being a scout to being a long-range missile boat. While it retains the NARC beacon for the 3L, it removes all of its other weapons in favor of a long-range missile 15 rack in its right torso, as well as a small pulse laser in the right arm and a small laser each in the left and right torsos. There isn't too much to say about the design, except that if anything, it is comparable to the Fed Sun's Valkyrie in that it fills the same role for Capellan forces. The battle value of this little missile boat is 659. After the 3M, the Raven was upgraded with a new variant in the 3060s, the RVN-4L model. This version of the Raven, although not an X model, did serve as a testbed for the Confederation's newly developed stealth armor. In order to use the armor effectively without overheating, the design uses 10 double heat sinks. The weapons loadout is almost identical to the 3L, with the exception of the medium lasers, which have been upgraded to extended range models. The battle value of this little battlefield ninja is 989. The next variant we'll cover is the Raven 5L. Developed alongside the Raven 2, the 5L is built with the engine intended for the Raven 2, giving it a top speed of over 120 kilometers an hour. The mech has an awkward weapons payload of a pair of ER medium lasers and two improved one-shot SRM-2 launchers. I thought that was three of them. Anyway, it carries some of the most advanced equipment on a Raven with an Angel ECM suite, a TAG designator, and an improved NARC missile beacon launcher that can fire tracking pods as well as explosive ECM and even haywire pods. All of these do everything from explode to fry internal equipment. Much like the 4L before it, the 5L is equipped with stealth armor, making it another one of the Capellan's battlefield ninjas. The 5L has a battle value of 1,053. Finally, as a bonus, we will take a look at the 5X, known as the Raven 2. This version was designed to be the end-all be-all of Capellan electronic warfare capabilities in a mech. The 5X has a maximum speed of over 110 kilometers an hour. It is protected by stealth armor, much like the 4L and 5L. The mech is equipped with a tight stream electromagnetic pulse weapon, allowing it to disable enemy mechs to make them easier to attack for its lancemates. The mech mounts an advanced Bloodhound active probe system and uses I've already mentioned the Angel ECM, but does use an Angel ECM when its stealth armor is not activated. It gives the mech exceptional capabilities of interfering with enemy electronic targeting and communication systems. On top of all this, the mech has its actual armaments, a pair of extended range medium lasers, a multi-missile launcher 5, allowing it to fire both short and long range missiles. Room for all of this was made by adding 5 tons to the Raven's chassis. The battle value of this bleeding edge little mech is 1858. And that is a big jump between the Raven 5L and the Raven 2. So let's take a look at these machines in Alpha Strike. So obviously some of the earlier variants are going to have similar stat lines, but will have different special abilities based on their payloads. The Raven 1X is type battle mech, size 1, target move 2, movement of 10, is a scout, has a point value of 23. The damage it puts out is 2 at short and medium with no long range. The mech has no overheat and has armor of 2 and structure of 3. The special abilities of the 1X are ECM, light probe, and recon. The 2X has an identical stat line with the exception of having one additional armor point, an overheat of 1, and no special abilities. The point value of this variant is 22. The 3X is completely identical to the 1X with the exception that it has the TSM special ability and a point value of 24. The last of the early models of the Raven, the 4X, also identical to the 1X, classified as a striker, can jump up to 10 inches, and has a short range value of 3, has 4 armor instead of 2. This variant comes in at 24 points. The reason I wanted to cover all these in this way for Alpha Strike is that they all have a similar role. The 2X and 4X obviously give up their EW capabilities for enhanced combat capability, but otherwise serve the same role as a forward observer, and as the EW equipment, which was on the 1X and 3X, was a succession war system, it didn't actually have anything to use it on. It was, at the time, the most advanced system in the Inner Sphere. Overall, these four variants let you choose whether or not to have EW equipment or to bring a little bit more firepower and maneuverability. The 3L model is similar to the earlier models, but actually brings more modern equipment with it to the battlefield. It is type battle mech, size 1, TMM2, movement of 12 inches, a scout, and has a point value of 26. For damage, it can do 2 at short and medium, and has no long-range capabilities or overheat. It has armor of 3, structure of 2, for protection with the special abilities of case, ECM, probe, recon, and standard narc and tag. This is the most capable of the older Ravens, and with a point value of only 3 points more than the 1X, is an absolutely wonderful alternative, unless you're playing a game that requires you to bring pre-clan invasion equipment. The 3M is the odd man out here, as it were. Most of its stat line does feel familiar. Type battle mech, size 1, target move of 2, and movement of 12. It's classified as a missile boat and has the lowest point value of any Raven at 20 points. The 3M has damage values of 2 short and 1 at medium and long ranges, with an overheat of 0. Armor on this variant is 2, and structure is 2, with the special abilities of case, indirect fire 1, and standard narc. Getting into the 4L Raven, which was first seen in the Civil War period, the mech starts off with the familiar type battle mech, size 1, target move 2, move 12 inches, scout, and has a point value of 31. It has damage capabilities of 2 at short and medium, nothing at 0, no overheat. The mech has 3 armor and 2 structure, and has the special abilities of ECM, probe, recon, standard narc, stealth, and tag. This one is an excellent spotter for other units, even if it's staying at long range due to the stealth armor. Finally, as far as the normal Ravens, we get to the 5L. It has a similar stat line to all the other Ravens we've looked at, with a base of type battle mech, size 1, target move of 3, move of 16, roll of scout, point value of 33. So it's getting more expensive. This machine's still familiar, but it's just different enough. The mech has damage values of 2, short and medium, no long range, no overheat. It has an armor of 3, structure of 2, with the special abilities of Angel ACM, Improved Narc, Stealth, and Tag, making it an excellent spotter with the ability to use a variety of different missile pods in its Narc launcher. Of course, we also have our little bonus, the Raven 2. This mech is type battle mech, size 2, target movement modifier of 2, movement of 4, or sorry, target movement modifier of 3, movement of 14 inches, roll of scout, and a massive 46 point value. For damage, it can do 2 at short and medium, 0 with an asterisk at long, so you might do damage at long. It has armor of 4, 2 structure, with special abilities of Angel ECM, Bloodhound Probe, BH, IF 0 with an asterisk. Once again, it's possible to do damage with indirect fire. You have to roll a 4 up after you hit. Recon, Stealth, and T-Semp 1, which is one of the coolest things because it'll either just mess with your enemy or it will shut their mech down. The Raven 2 isn't so much of a combat mech as it is a Swiss Army knife that can sneak up on an opponent hit them with TSAM, and allow its bigger friends to beat the snot out of it. Overall, an interesting, if expensive, evolution of the Raven. I do hope in the future there are enough variants of the Raven 2 to give it a mech tech segment of its own. So, before I sign off, there were two other things I wanted to talk about real quick. First of all, the Trevor Project raffle. Right now, we are at a full trinary, and I still have more. There are at least another star and a half, 2 stars of mechs coming in. So we're already full cluster, actually. So we have a trinary of mechs, a trinary of battle armor, a trinary of vehicles. And then we have on top of that another star of mechs coming in, and I will probably finance another star of battle armor and vehicles just to have basically... yeah, a lot of support elements in there. So this is something massive, and there's also some wonderful prize packs that include force packs and dice and all sorts of little goodies and cards from Paul LaRue that I got. Steel Warrior Studios is supposed to be sending some stuff. There's some terrain involved. It's huge. It's gigantic. It has tons of stuff. And you could win any of this for an entry of $5. I mean... $5 could win you an entire force pack, or it could win you an entire cluster of Clan Nova Cat G Galaxy. Oh, and the Somerset Strikers now, too. We have the Somerset Strikers as well. Beautifully painted bottles. And I want to thank the artists who have been working on all of this. I want to thank the people behind the scenes for doing what they've done to make this possible. And right now, we are up at $838 of 1,000 gold. And we still have, like, what, half of May left and all of June? So, you know, we can beat 1,000. I don't have a lot of entries right now. I mean, I have a lot of entries, but I don't have a lot of people who have entered. I have a lot of people who have entered a lot of times. And, not everybody's going to walk away with something at this point, but a lot of people are. Also, I wanted to talk about NB Kaiju, is how it should be pronounced, I believe. Kaiju. Anyway, NB Kaiju, who is... They're on... Twitter, they're on Twitter. I first encountered them through one of the channels on Discord, one of the BattleTech channels. I can't remember which one. I know they're on a few of the same as me, but they have a store at Redbubble, and I've gone ahead and put a link on the Unicorn Company podcast, Facebook page, and it's a Unicorn Company, a BattleTech podcast. And there you will find a link to their Redbubble store where they have the most amazing sticker ever. I know, I sound like a 10-year-old, like, oh my God, I want the thing. But yes, it is a giant Mad Cat, trans Mad Cat. You can get it with or without a rainbow background that says, "This machine stomps fascists." And it's like $1.34 is the lowest price for the sticker. So, yeah, I mean, that's pretty freaking awesome. Also, I just wanted to go ahead and put out there that, you know, if you do want to support the podcast, if you're listening on YouTube, like, subscribe. Also, if you want to financially support us and help us out in that way, and, I mean, it lets us do more things for our patrons and also get better sound equipment, better everything. You can go to patreon.com/unicorncompany, and there you will find, I want to say it's patreon.com/unicorncompany. Yeah, it's all one word, patreon.com/unicorncompany. I have tiers, everything from, I want to say $1 all the way up to... Oh God, I want to say that there is a... So I can't remember all the tiers. Which is horrible, I know, right? But there are tiers for everything from just donating $1 to like $20. And with the $20, you get 3 miniatures a month from Mift Kitty Minis. And also every month, or well, I try to do it with every episode, putting out a little PDF of the mechs that we cover in the Mech Tech segments. So, it's custom Alpha Strike cards for that in PDF form. So yeah, go ahead and if you want to support us, check that out. And I want to say that's it. I want to say that's everything for today. I really appreciate all of you who are listening, who are sticking with me through this tough time right now. And thank you. Y'all have a good night, good day, good evening, good whatever it is where you are. And I will try to have the next episode out on time, which is less than a week away.
I'm gonna find my meaning, I can make a change, I wanna play the game.